Welcome to Access This. I'm Scotty McClymonds. Today's show is the last of a four-part series featuring Kim King interviewing Michelle Colvard and Dr. Peg Nozick. Dr. Nozick is the founder of CROWD, or the Center for Research on Women with Disabilities.
I don't want to miss the opportunity to talk about some of the more important things that you have done as a result of your work at CROWD. Self-esteem for women with disabilities has been a reoccurring theme in your research. And one of the key findings that resulted out of one of your studies was this look at the self-esteem of women with disabilities and without disabilities. And the results were pretty surprising, and I think they are extraordinary for people who might be interested in how you take research and really turn it into some practical applications for improving the self-esteem of women with disabilities. Share a little bit about that project and what you found.
Well, we found that women with disabilities, with physical disabilities, differed from women without disabilities in three major areas. One was employment. As I mentioned earlier, the employment rates for women with disabilities are very, 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 very low. Opportunities to get employed and to pursue a career are so limited, even after 20 years or more of really active vocational rehabilitation services and opportunities, we're still down there. I mean, the statistics for us are really horrible. And the second area was in relationships, that women with physical disabilities are less likely to be married and less likely to have children than their able-bodied female counterparts. And the third area was abuse, that women with disabilities had reported more incidences and a different kind of abuse in their lifetimes than women without disabilities. It wasn't just limited to interpersonal violence, like, you know, a spouse abusing a husband abusing his wife, or, something like that. The women with disabilities were more likely to experience abuse from family members, emotional abuse, physical abuse, even sexual abuse. And they experienced this abuse for longer periods of time. So it was harder for them to break out of that situation. Well, we found, though, that when you looked at the self-esteem of those women, and you took away the fact that they were less likely to be employed, less likely to have satisfying intimate relationships, and more likely to experience abuse, we found that their levels of self-esteem were almost equal to the women without disabilities. So, is it the disability that's the problem here? I don't think so. I think it's got a lot more to do with the society we live in, the kinds of things that we let people get away with in their treatment of women with disabilities, denying their femininity, denying their womanhood, denying their power as individuals. So it helped me to focus on the real cause of a lot of these problems. And it wasn't how many nerves were firing into muscles in my wasted body. I mean, it had to do with how other people saw me as a person. So I figured that's where we really need to spend our energy. Let the doctors, let the researchers figure out how nerves work and how muscles work, and let them find a drug, or now a gene therapy or a stem cell therapy, that could address that problem. But my role here is to address the environment in which we live and try to make changes that will make it more accommodating for women with disabilities and more accepting of their womanhood.
So let me try and restate that just so that I can make sure that I understand and the listeners understand. So if, for example, a woman with a disability had gainful employment or some very satisfying or fulfilling volunteer service, if she had quality relationships with family or friends, if she had not experienced physical or mental or sexual abuse, her level of self-esteem was pretty much the same as a woman without a disability. It was when those things were added on top of the disability that really created the very, very low, low levels of self-esteem. Is that basically what you found?
I think that sums it up very well. Yes.
So the idea then, if you were interested in raising the level of self-esteem for women with disabilities, or if you were interested in preventing low levels of self-esteem for, say, girls or young women with disabilities, you would focus on making sure that they could prevent abuse or get out of abusive situations effectively. You could work with them on or work with the environment on making sure that employment opportunities or good quality activities were available for them, and really focus on the skills and the strategies and tools necessary for developing and maintaining quality relationships.
Very much so. I think especially when you grow up with your disability, the learning the rules of society is very painful and difficult, because, I mean, nobody really told me the truth about what a jerk I was until I went away to college. I got the label prima donna. Oh, how appropriate. Especially since I was a music major. But yeah, I mean, I never realized the impact of how I acted and how I talked was on other people until finally I got out of the very protective environment of my parents' home, and I was out in society, and people who didn't like the way I acted told me so. You know? And so if nothing else, if I could do something to help young women with disabilities just learn about that, and I do think that they'll have more opportunities to learn about it. Society really has changed a whole lot in these past 30, 40 years. But just to help them learn about their own value, and to try to foster that sense of self-esteem. That's so important, because that's another thing that my 20 years of research has shown, is that it's all in your head. I'm sorry. I hate to say that, because we're so tired of hearing doctors tell us that, oh, your hip hurts. Well, it's probably in your head. No, it's in my hip. Anyhow, that's not what I mean. What I really mean is that how you perceive it and how you deal with it is all in your head. And in the end, that's all that matters. Mm-hmm. So it's got to do with how you think of yourself. If you really believe that you're a woman of value, all of a sudden you get the most incredible strength to fight the barriers, to learn how to live with what you've been given in life, and how to cope with it, and how to turn it to your benefit, how to make your own happiness. And that's in your head. That's got nothing to do with your body, really. I mean, ultimately, it's in your head. So it's how you think about yourself and your place in the universe.
Let's talk a little bit about the wonderful project that you did on abuse for women with disabilities. It's a hard topic to talk about. While you were doing the research, I know some of the stories were just heartbreaking. But I want to focus on the great work that you did in terms of creating the campaign and the partnerships that you had with independent living centers across the country. Share a little bit about that project with us.
Well, I mentioned about all the different branches that sprouted out from that sexuality study that got our center started. One of them was this abuse issue. I mean, we couldn't listen to those stories and then just write up a report. I mean, we had to do more about it. And we were lucky to be able to get a couple more grant funding opportunities to really look at this problem and to try to figure out some solutions. So we interviewed women again. We did some surveys. We did talking to women who were running domestic violence programs. We talked to vocational rehabilitation counselors and asked them, well, do you think abuse might be obstructing your client's achievement of their vocational goals? You know, it's so hard not to say, duh, but Anyhow, they basically were sympathetic, but they didn't know. They had never had the chance to learn anything about abuse. And the women's shelters had never had a chance to learn about disability. So you put this all together, and what you've got is nothing for the women. Women with disabilities who are in an intolerable situation at home, be it with a spouse, be it with an abusive family member, whatever, there really is nowhere to go. The shelters are inaccessible for the most part. The counselors don't have an intimate knowledge of what it is to be trapped in that kind of a situation where you can't hide money in a shoebox. You know, you physically can't, just grab a taxi and escape. There's so many different things that we have to deal with as women with disabilities to protect our safety. So anyhow, we learned a lot about the deficits in knowledge, what people didn't know. So then we got another grant to tell them what we thought they ought to know. So we produced flyers and we did a lot of campaigning to raise the level of awareness among professionals and service providers and the women themselves about how to stop abuse and how to plan for their own safety.
Remember that wonderful safety card and the great poster that we did? I had the good fortune of working with you at that time. And we really did form, I think, a critical triangle with independent living centers, with abuse centers, and with the women themselves as a triangle to really help both prevent and to address these, you know, horrible issues of abuse among women with disabilities. And I have to tell you, I'm very proud of that work that we did together. I think we did some great work, and we really made a difference out there for a lot of women with disabilities who were not being acknowledged in their abusive situations, and for social service organizations, both the disability organizations and the abuse, the battered women's organizations, who were just not connecting to each other in a way that was really benefiting women with disabilities who were in these situations.
One of the grants that we got gave us the funding to work with specific independent living centers to try to develop models of that kind of collaboration that would help the women. In other words, the independent living centers would reach out to the domestic violence programs and would bring in social service providers to help the women to find an alternative place to live or an alternative way to get around, whatever it took. But getting them all together and pulling all their resources to help a woman with some really unusual circumstances, it was fabulous to watch just the lights dawn. Yeah. It worked, and everybody in that whole arena felt that they were doing something, something that was really worthwhile. So I'm really appreciative of your work on that, Kim. I was so glad that we could steal you away from ILRU and have you work with us to develop the communications element of that project, because we produced materials that had a very strong impact visually and emotionally and in their content as well.
You're listening to Access This, Disability Radio, with Kim King and Dr. Peg Nozick, founder of the Center for Research on Women with Disabilities.
I want to make sure that our listeners know how important your work at the Center for Research on Women with Disabilities has been. It was one of the few, certainly not the only, but one of the few organizations in the country that connected, I think, three important things, and you and I have talked about this a lot. It connected women, it connected health, and it connected disability. And with those three connections, there were just so many rich and wonderful research studies and important work that's come out of that. And I know that you you are very focused on providing practical knowledge and tools and information for women, and not just doing research so that we know more things, but do research so that knowledge can then help us really help people improve the quality of their lives. And so in the time that we have left, why don't you share with our listeners some tips that you have for women with disabilities, specifically for what the kinds of things they can do to help improve the quality of their life and their health.
Well, I have five messages that I'd like to give to women with disabilities. And these are five messages that I've come to from my own experience and from the research that we've done. And they reinforce each other. You know, it's kind of crazy when you get all this federal money to prove something that you already know is true. But, you know, the rest of the world doesn't know, so you got to prove it to them. Anyhow, this is what our research has found. And these are my my recommendations. It's my advice to women with disabilities about how they might attain a better state of health and also a higher, a better concept of themselves. The first is truly believe that you're a woman of value. That once you have that power of conviction of yourself, and you know that you have a place in the universe, which we all do, but when you know that and you act on it, you have so much power to change your own life, to I would even say, heal yourself to a certain extent. I mean, I start every day with a meditation, and part of my meditation is feeling that vibration within me, that light within me, and it permeates every cell in my body, and it heals every cell in my body. Now, whether I get sick or not is irrelevant, but I think just by having that confirmation that the power to heal lies within me gives me a lot of confidence and a lot of strength to face all this stuff we got to face every day. Wow. The second message, honor your body. For so many years, I really hated my body, hated how it got like it was. I didn't know why. I didn't know exactly who or what it was I hated, but I definitely was not happy with it. And as I mentioned, I pushed. I pushed and pushed. You know how athletes will push through, the marathon runners will push through the wall? Well, I lived my whole life like that. Exhaustion, fatigue, pain, you name it. I just denied it. And when I had that experience of having to have the emergency trach and using a ventilator and recovering from it, it appeared to me important that you gotta listen to your body. Your body is gonna tell you things. You have to trust your body, and you have to make it a temple.
Is it your sense that your body really was telling you this all along and you just weren't paying attention?
I was totally oblivious, totally in denial. I mean, for years, I was just tolerating the fatigue and this difficulty in breathing. And I just, you know, would do things to cope with it, to try to maximize my energy, but, you know, it wasn't working. And I was getting sicker and sicker. I was having colds, like, every month, and it was wearing me out. And I didn't listen. I didn't have any confidence that my body knew what was best for it. Number three in my list of recommendations is deny the myths. Now, we live with a lot of stereotypes. First and foremost is women with disabilities are not sexual. So I feel called to deny that and to prove otherwise. And I feel called to deny the myth that I should be grateful for being alive. Yes, I'm grateful for being alive. That is a fact. But you got to go on from there. You know, the disability is only, well, definitely it has driven my path in life. It's not all there is to me. There's a whole lot of other stuff to me. This idea that women with disabilities shouldn't and can't work, well, I've really disproven that. literally almost worked myself to death. And now I look back and I say, gee, I didn't have to prove that to anybody. But my life was an example of what I believed. So just, you know, make sure that you're living your life in a way that renounces all the things that other people think you should be doing or the limits that other people place on you. My fourth message is be a thread in the fabric of your community. And I just love this image. I have a picture on a poster that's up on our website that is a picture from the World Health Organization. They had a photo competition about disability. This is a photograph of a woman's foot. And in her toes, between her toes, she's holding an embroidery needle and she's embroidering a design on a cloth. Ah, it just moves me to tears when I look at that image. So I love this idea of being a thread. You are that thread. And your rightful place is in the fabric of your community. Now, my last piece of information really has to do with survival. My fifth recommendation is demand answers. I have been to so many doctor's appointments where they just really don't know. And I know some of my friends have kind of swallowed it and just gone home. It's the old case of, well, you just have to go home and live with it. Okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. I want answers. I want to know what exactly is my reproductive capacity. Do I have the potential to have children? I wanted to know that. And at that age when that was a concern to me, when I was in my late 20s, I did go to a doctor and ask, and he looked at me and he said, well, I certainly wouldn't advise that. And I said, why? He said, well, just imagine a football sitting in front of your stomach. You know, such insensitivity, such wanton ignorance. So I just, now, you know, every time I give a speech, especially to younger audiences, the message is, demand answers. Don't settle for that. That's baloney. We shouldn't have to accept that as the answer. So we have to seek out experts. We have to get on the internet and look up websites that deal with some of these issues. We have to ask embarrassing questions. I just love doing that. I'm sorry, but I really get a charge out of going up to somebody who's doing a study and saying, now how would your study have affected women? You know, they don't know because they never looked at the gender effect. So I'm sorry, but it's what we have to do. We have to demand answers, and nobody is going to put attention into our issues unless we really make a loud noise.
I know that you have to go. There's so much more we can talk about, and I hope that with Scotty's help, we'll be able to get you back at some time to talk about some of the other areas that we were not able to cover. Before we say goodbye, though, would you tell the listeners how they might find out more information about CROWD? Do you have a website? Do you have some other way for individuals to find out more about some of the topics we've talked about with regard to CROWD and its research?
Our website is www.bcm.edu/CROWD, CROWD. So the BCM stands for Baylor College of Medicine. So I'm saying B as in boy, B as in Baylor, okay? Then C as in college and M as in medicine, .edu/CROWD. And we also have a toll-free number, and that's 1-800-44-CROWD. Now, I don't know what those numbers are because I can only remember the part about 44-CROWD. But maybe you could figure it out on your phone. But we have a lot of information on our website. The homepage talks about this health promotion campaign that we're doing. And I have the posters and the fact sheets and lots of different newsletters about, you know, about weight management, about physical activity, about how to stop smoking, about how to deal with depression. about how to reduce the stress in your life. Information about all of those is up on our website, and the links are right there on the home page. So we've got graphic materials and printed materials, and I welcome everyone to visit our website and to make the most use of that material as they possibly can.
Let me say, on behalf of women with disabilities everywhere, thank you for dedicating your life to these issues that are so important to us, and thank you so much for being on Access This with us today.
Thank you, Kim, and thank you for being one of the lights that I've followed throughout my career.
There was a young maiden who lived by the shore. Let the wind blow, blow, blow. No one could she find to comfort her mind. As she sat all alone on the shore, she sat all alone on the shore.
Thanks to Michelle Colvard, Dr. Peg Nozick, and Kim King. Thanks for listening to Access This, Disability Radio. I'm Scotty McClymonds.